One more application. We'll take up one more application of detection of regions of interest. And this application is on the detection of the pectoral muscle edge in mammograms. The pectoral muscle edge is an important indicator of the boundary between the chest muscle and the breast tissue in a mammogram when mediolateral oblique views are taken. There's a significant difference in the density of the pectoral muscle as compared to breast tissue. The pectoral muscle region contains axillary lymph nodes, and if they are affected by breast cancer, it would be important to recognize those regions. So the pectoral muscle itself represents a predominant density or high density region in most MLO views of mammograms, and the protocol requires that the pectoral muscle edge be clearly visible up to at least the level of the nipple and further below in the MLO view. But the high density of the pectoral muscle region could affect image processing methods that are designed to detect tumors, because the high density of tumor tissue could be comparable to the high density of the pectoral muscle tissue, which are both higher than the normal density of breast parenchyma. Analysis of the pectoral muscle region itself could be used to identify lymph nodes that may be affected by breast cancer. Now, in most images, we could approximate the edge of the pectoral muscle in the MLO mammograms by a straight line. So we could use the Huff transform to detect the straight line approximation to the pectoral muscle edge. Now, as we have seen, the Huff transform can detect the specified object or approximations to the specified object, such as circles and straight lines. In the examples of the circles I showed you, the Huff transform could detect approximate circles and even broken circles. Similarly, in the case of straight lines, we can detect an approximate straight line present in the image, or given an edge that is not a straight line, you could obtain a straight line fit that describes that line fairly accurately. So this work was done by Riccardo Ferrari, who did his PhD with me as a co-supervisor. I was his co-supervisor. His supervisor is Professor Annie Franz Freire in Brazil. We collaborated and worked on this project as one of the parts of his PhD thesis. He developed several techniques, one for the detection of the pectoral muscle edge, one for the detection of the breast boundary, another for detection and segmentation of the fibroglandular disc, and finally putting all of this information together to recognize the presence of bilateral asymmetry between the left and right breasts in mammograms. So this is a small part of his PhD project. So this method starts automatically identifying an appropriate region of interest containing the pectoral muscle. So we just need a portion of the image that contains the pectoral muscle edge. For some reason, I'm not seeing the contrast adequately. Okay, here. Sorry. So this region, labeled by the points N1, N2, N3, N4, that box is cut automatically. Let me go back and explain how that is done. So first, an approximate breast contour delimiting the control points is obtained by using the method for detection of the Skinner boundary that we skipped. So that is in the part that we will not be doing unless there is time left tomorrow. So that is in section 5.9 of this same chapter. So that is an approximate breast contour, and then six control points, N1 to N6, are used to determine this region of interest that contains a good part of the pectoral muscle edge. It doesn't have to be the entire pectoral muscle edge. So N1 is the top left corner pixel of the boundary loop of the breast boundary. N5 is then obtained as the lowest pixel on the left-hand edge of the boundary loop. And N3 is the midpoint between N1 and N5. And N2 is the farthest point on the boundary from N5 in terms of distance through the breast. And N4 is the point that completes a rectangle with the other three points, N1, 2, 3. And N6 is the farthest point on the boundary loop from N1. So this is how these points were defined. And for this mammogram example, we have the approximate breast boundary here. N1 is this point, N2, N3, N4, and N5, N6 coincide here. So all we want is this box, which will contain most of the pectoral muscle, but not all, depending upon the mammogram. To obtain these points, we need the breast boundary to be identified, for which we used a simple approximation given by the method described in that section 5.9. So I have skipped that part. So let's go back here. So the region of interest is then this rectangular region given by the points N1, 2, 3, 4. Now in some cases, this region may not include the total length of the pectoral muscle, but the portion of the muscle present in this box, determined automatically, is adequate to fit a straight line. So you just need a certain portion to which you fit a straight line, and then you draw the line through the rest of the image. By limiting the size of the region in this manner, the bias that could be introduced by other linear structures that could be present in the breast in the fibroglandular disc will be minimized. And then you put some further constraints. The pectoral muscle is considered to be a straight line, the edge rather, limited to this angle theta between 120 and 170 degrees, with the angle computed as in this figure, 565 here. So the reference axis coordinate system is with respect to the center of the image. The angle theta is taken this way to the perpendicular to the edge of the pectoral muscle. Rho is the distance, theta is this angle, and we use the Huff transform using the coordinates rho and theta, with the center of the image taken as the origin. The pectoral muscle area is indicated by A, and these the points X, Y on the line are shown. And in this case, this is the actual pectoral muscle edge detected by the method. And that also explains the coordinate system. So according to this coordinate system, the angle of the pectoral muscle is expected to be within this range, 120 degrees to 170 degrees. Now that is reasonable because the pectoral muscle edge cannot be vertical and cannot be horizontal in mammograms. The pectoral muscle line intercepts the line segments N1 and N2. The pectoral line is present in partial or in total length in this box that we have drawn, N1 through N4. And the pectoral muscle appears on mammograms as a dense region with relatively homogeneous gray levels. These are the conditions and assumptions made. We apply a Gaussian filter with these parameters, sigma x, sigma y equal to 4, first to smooth the ROI and remove high frequency noise that could be present. And then the Huff transform is applied to the Sobel gradient of the ROI to detect the edge of the pectoral muscle. And this representation is used for the Huff transform, rho equal to x cos theta plus y sine theta, but with reference to x naught, y naught, which is the origin of the coordinate system as the center of the image, as I showed in this example. The Huff accumulator was quantized to 45 bins of 4 degrees each by using this constraint, phi xy minus theta in absolute value less than 2 degrees, where phi xy is the orientation of the Sobel gradient at that pixel. And then the accumulator cells are incremented using the magnitude of the gradient instead of unit increments. Therefore, pixels with strong gradient will have larger weight. So this is not the Huff transform as I explained earlier, but with a slight modification. So the modification is that the value that you put in the Huff accumulator cell for the pixel, if you have binarized the edge map, for each pixel in the binarized edge map, you would increment the Huff space accumulator by 1. Here, we use the magnitude of the Sobel gradient. So the larger the gradient, the more the contribution of that pixel. So a stronger value on the line will give you a stronger contribution to the corresponding accumulator cell. So only values of theta in this range are considered because the pectoral muscle is positioned as shown in the image, and that's correct. Yeah, that's all. There is nothing more there. We then applied a filtering procedure in the Huff space to eliminate all lines or values of the Huff space cells, pairs of rho and theta, that are unlikely to represent the pectoral muscle edge. And that procedure is as follows. All lines intercepting the top of the image outside the N1, N2 line segment, all with slopes outside this range, 120 to 170 degrees, are removed. And I need to go back outside the N1, N2 box here. So this is the upper limit of this box, rectangle drawn. So if you find a line from the Huff space that goes like this, then we don't take that. We reject it. The upper limit of the pectoral muscle must be within this range, N1 to N2 in the image. So here, x-axis corresponds to 0 degree, and the chest wall is positioned on the left-hand side as shown in this example. Each remaining accumulator cell is then weighted by this factor. We want to enhance lines that belong to the pectoral muscle edge. And for that, we have this factor alpha, mu over sigma squared times A, for a given theta and rho. So here, mu and sigma squared are the mean and variance of the gray level values in the area A of the pectoral muscle defined by the candidate line. So for each rho and theta, you have a candidate line that could potentially be the edge of the pectoral muscle. Now, if we were to take that candidate, then we have a certain boundary for the pectoral muscle. And then we ask the question, what is the mean of that area in the mammogram? What is the sigma square, the variance? And what is the area, A? The reason for the mean is that the pectoral muscle is of higher density. Variance is low in the pectoral muscle. So if you have only the pectoral muscle pixels in the region, then the variance will be low. If you include breast tissue, the variance will be high. Area A, we want to get the edge that gives the maximal area there. So using this weighting factor, we'll be enhancing candidate lines that are likely to be the desired edge. So this procedure will enhance the Huff transform peaks that define dense homogeneous regions, which the pectoral muscle is. The weight related to the area is designed to differentiate the true pectoral muscle from the pectoralis minor, and I'll show you some examples where there could be an additional edge and there is another part of the muscle, and we don't want to detect that part. Then the parameters rho and theta of the accumulator cell with the maximum value will be taken to represent the pectoral muscle line. So that is what we get for this image here, this line. A is the area of the part of the image segmented in this portion within this box, N1, N2, N3, N4, and by this line. So this is the straight line approximation to the pectoral muscle edge, which in this case is a good straight line. But in some images, it is not a straight line. And let me see, where is the other image? If you give me one moment. Okay. So here is an image of the Huff space accumulator cells. we have 0 to rho max and 0 to pi. So this is the rho axis for the straight line representation. This is the angle 0 to pi. And we get a maximum in this region where we expect the pectoral muscle edge to be. We get a number of other values that are significantly large here. And we need to confine the scope for search. And for that, in part B, this region is after removing lines that intercept the top of the image outside the limit N1, N2. So now we are constrained only to this part of the half space. And the angle is already limited to 120 to 170 degrees. So there is a further limit based on the box N1, N2, N3, N4 drawn. And finally, part C here is after applying the multiplicative factor I described, alpha equal to mu over sigma squared times A. So here now we have enhanced this part, and the maximum in that region is taken to be the candidate for the pectoral muscle edge. So from the half space, which contains the entire region from 0 to rho max and 0 to pi, initially we placed a limit of 120 degrees, which is this point or this vertical axis, and then 170 degrees, which is just a little away from pi. And then we cut that using the reference line N1, N2, determined for that specific mammogram. And then we apply the weight according to the potential regions extracted by these points. And of these points in the half space, you select the maximum, which gives you one rho and one theta. That defines the straight line, which is what we saw in that example. So finally, there is only one line that has to intercept that the upper edge of the image between N1 and N2. Okay? Let me see. I should be able to... Using Gabor wavelets, we have another method. I'm not sure if I can finish in 15 minutes. Is it okay if I go 5 or 10 minutes past 6? Does anybody have to leave exactly at 6? You're okay for 20, 25 minutes more? Okay. So I may not be able to finish exactly at 6. I may go a few minutes more. Okay. So let's look at the second method to detect the edge of the pectoral muscle using Gabor wavelets, which are directional filters that could be used to detect straight lines or parts of lines that are straight segments at a particular angle. And this will overcome the limitation of the half transform Bess method, which will only give you one straight line to fit the curvilinear edge of the pectoral muscle. The edge of the pectoral muscle is not always straight, as you will see in the examples to follow. And we will see what the Huff method gives and what the Gabor method gives. And in order to get a contour that is not exactly a straight line but follows the contour of the pectoral muscle more accurately, we use the bank of Gabor filters to enhance the directional and piecewise linear structures that are present in an ROI that we define to contain the pectoral muscle. Here, the ROI is defined to contain the entire pectoral muscle because we're not fitting a line, but we have to make sure that the entire pectoral muscle is present in this part of the mammogram. And it was segmented in this manner. Please ignore this box. The ROI was segmented by detecting this vertical edge, which is the edge of the breast in the mammogram image. And then, let me just read here. Defined by the chest wall and the upper limit of the skin air boundary. There is a limit of the skin air boundary again, and using that, we drop a perpendicular and cut that part of the mammogram so we can minimize the computation. You ignore this box, which is for something else. So this division of the mammogram is performed automatically, but using the skin air boundary as the reference, just as in the previous case. Okay. So this is defined automatically as a rectangle formed by the chest wall on the left-hand side and a vertical line through the uppermost point of the skin air boundary, drawn along the entire height of the mammogram as the right-hand edge. And that region is used for further filtering and detection. Now, of that ROI, we decompose into components with different scale and orientation using a bank of tunable Gabor filters. I'll explain the Gabor filters next. And then the magnitude and phase components of the images are combined and used. The flowchart is given here, but let's skip this, and I'll describe the procedure as we go along. Gabor wavelets are obtained by taking a Gaussian, which is this part. 1 over 2 pi sigma x sigma I is the scale factor exponential minus half x squared plus y squared over sigma x squared and sigma y squared. This is the Gaussian with standard deviation of sigma x and sigma y in the x and y directions, and they're not equal. It is an oriented filter. And plus j 2 pi w x, which is multiplication of this exponential with a complex exponential of frequency w, which is a sinusoid, cosine and sine for the real and imaginary parts. So you take a Gaussian, a two-dimensional Gaussian, a smooth bell-shaped function, and multiply with a sinusoid in the direction shown here as x. And then we can turn it, we can rotate these to obtain Gaussian, the Gabor filters for various angles. So this is a basic Gabor wavelet. And then Gabor wavelets are obtained by dilation and rotation of that basic function, where you obtain the scale factor a to the minus m psi x prime y prime. And then x prime and y prime are obtained by rotating cos theta n, sine theta n minus and cos theta n to apply this. And there is a translation with x naught and y naught. A to the minus m is a scale factor. Here, x naught, y naught is the center of the filter in the spatial domain for reference. Theta n reference is giving the angle as n pi over k. So we can choose a certain range of angles. K is the number of orientations desired, and m and n indicate the scale and orientation. So there is a scale factor and an orientation factor. The frequency domain equivalent of this is shown here. Capital Psi UV is a Gaussian function that is placed at the selected frequency point in the two-dimensional frequency domain. So here you have, if you ignore the shift here in frequency, you have a Gaussian in the frequency domain expressed as 1 over 2 pi sigma u sigma v exponential minus half u square over sigma u square and v square over sigma v square, but with the u axis shifted to w, which is the modulation that you saw here with the complex exponential. So here we are multiplying in the image domain a Gaussian with a complex exponential. The Fourier transform of a Gaussian is a Gaussian. The multiplication here is convolution, which implies shifting in the frequency domain with this exponential. The Fourier transform of the exponential is an impulse at that frequency. So the Gaussian, which is the Fourier transform of this Gaussian, is shifted in the frequency domain and placed at that frequency, which is what you have here. Sigma u and sigma v are inversely related to sigma x and sigma y. And they are the standard deviation values of the Gaussian in the frequency domain. So design strategy here is to project the filters so as to ensure that the half peak magnitude supports of these filters touch one another and capture maximum information with minimum redundancy. And this is what they look like in the frequency domain. Each of the Gabor wavelets that I have shown here for various angles and various scales will give you one of these regions in the two-dimensional UV plane, in the frequency domain. There is symmetry, so there is the corresponding part for the negative frequency there, which I'm not showing. I'm only showing half of the UV plane. So for each of these, there is a corresponding conjugate part in the other negative side. Now, we choose only these angles because we know the pectoral muscle is oriented orthogonal to these. The orientation of the pectoral muscle is in that range by the placement of the mammogram. So there are only three angles that we are interested in, and we use four scales. By scaling the Gabor function, we can obtain filters at different frequency points. We can place this two-dimensional Gaussian. This is a Gaussian. It looks like an ellipse if it is thresholded, but in magnitude, this is a Gaussian. And we can place them at low frequency or medium frequency or higher and higher frequency by shrinking or expanding, that is dilating or expanding the Gabor wavelet. The angle of placement is controlled by the frequency W that is specified. That is the modulating sinusoid of the Gaussian. So by changing the angle or the frequency of the modulating frequency and the scale factor, we get 12 Gabor functions and the corresponding filters in the frequency domain spanning this part of the UV plane. Now, these are half power points from 0.5 to plus 1 in normalized square magnitude. But each one of these elliptical regions is, in essence, a two-dimensional Gaussian in the frequency domain. It's been cut at 0.5 to show this ellipse as the passband with gain more than 0.5. For other parts around, the gain is less than 0.5 and decays gradually according to the Gaussian for each of these 12 regions. So they overlap. Okay? Okay. So for the Gabor filters to be a family of what are called admissible 2D Gabor wavelets, there are some conditions of finite energy. Their Fourier transforms are pure bandpass functions having zero response at DC, at zero frequency. So we set the gain of each filter at zero to be equal to zero because the Gaussian functions decay, but there is no guarantee that it will be zero at that position according to the sigma x used. So the filters do not respond to regions with constant intensity. That intensity information is removed. To design the parameters, we use these conditions. We place conditions on the frequency cutoffs, UH and UL, and defined A to be UH over UL to the power of 1 over S minus 1. Sigma U defined in terms of UH and A in this manner. Sigma V defined in terms of K, the number of angles, UH and sigma square U, and these parameters. So here, UL and UH are the lower and upper center frequencies of interest. And K and S are the number of orientations and number of scales in the multi-resolution decomposition procedure. The multi-resolution comes from scaling of the Gabor wavelets, A to the power of minus M. And then the sinusoidal frequency W is set equal to UH. And M goes from 0 to 1, 0, 1 to S minus 1. That is the number of scales. And we used number of scales to be equal to 4. So we are only interested in image analysis and detection of the edge. We are not interested in reconstruction or synthesis backwards from the filtered components. So that removes certain conditions and requirements. So we, instead of using the wavelet coefficients, we use the magnitude of the filter response computed in this manner. AMNXY is FXY convolved with the even part of that function. So here, the even part indicates the even symmetric part of the complex Gabor filter. FXY is the region of interest, the part of the mammogram that is cut for filtering, and we do 2D convolution. And then we constitute a phase image and a magnitude image indicating orientation. There are k filtered images for k angles, and we use 3 angles and 4 scales. So from those, by vector composition of the magnitude and the corresponding angle, we get a phase image and a magnitude image. And a few other parameters. UL is 0.05 and UH is 0.45, scales 4, k equal to 12 in total. So each of these filters has a bandwidth of 15 degrees. So the images were adjusted or placed so that the chest wall is always on the left-hand side, and the pectoral muscle corresponds to the angle 45 to 90 degrees in this representation of angle. So it is the angle between the horizontal line and an imaginary straight line approximation to the pectoral muscle edge. So then we used only these filters, 45 degrees, 60, and 75 degrees, which are shown in those in the image earlier, in the frequency domain, which correspond to these filters. So 3 angles and 4 scales, a total of 12 filters. Now we get a vector here. The magnitude AXY and the phase phi XY at each location are used to represent what is called the edge flow vector in a method that was described by Ma and Manjunath. So this part I may have to go through quickly so that we don't go into the minor details here. There's a method called edge flow propagation to identify the strong edges in the output of the Gabor functional Gabor filters. The phase at each point in the image is propagated until it reaches a location where there are two opposite directions of this edge flow in this manner. For the box that I showed in one of the images, these arrowheads indicate the part of the pectoral muscle edge here, and B and C indicate the edge flow map before and after this propagation method.